Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. The Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry is something you probably haven't heard of. That agency, identified as ATSDR for short, is part of the alphabet soup of the federal bureaucracy. Its mission? To protect communities from the harmful health effects of hazardous waste sites and environmental emergencies. But when a team of Reuters reporters looked into an environmental emergency right here in the St. Louis region, in Spanish Village, near the Westlake landfill, they found something peculiar. Contrary to its stated mission, the ATSDR and its findings were being used to defend those responsible for hazardous waste. There was something else these reporters found in Spanish Village: cancer.
This is my house. That's the Ingrams. They both passed. One had lung cancer. This is the Cornett's house. She passed away of liver cancer. That is the house. Their adult son, who grew up, was diagnosed with kidney cancer. And the people across the street, his mother was diagnosed with breast cancer.
That was Melissa Mitchell, one of dozens of current and former residents who spoke to Reuters for their investigation. That investigation is titled How a U.S. Health Agency Became a Shield for Polluters. Michelle Conlon is one of the six journalists who produced that investigation. Michelle, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much for having us, Elaine.
We also have reporter Michael Pell, who is also part of that Reuters investigation team. Welcome to you as well, Michael.
Thanks for having us, Elaine.
And I'm very appreciative of your time today. Now, let's go over some of the basics of this story. Now, before we look at what's happening with the Westlake landfill and those cancers that we heard about, what are the agency basics we need to know, Michael? What is the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, and what is its job?
So the agency was created in the 1980s to protect Americans from some of the most toxic waste sites in the country, specifically Superfund sites. And for years, the agency has been plagued with problems, doing reports that don't find problems, but instead dismiss health concerns.
Mm-hmm. And when you say a Superfund site, what does that mean?
These are toxic waste sites that have been identified by the federal government as some of the most harmful, dangerous sites in the country, and that are therefore eligible for huge amounts of money to clean them up.
Mm-hmm. And these regulatory agencies, you know, in the introduction we talked about alphabet soup, there are many major regulatory bodies. In the context of what we were discussing about the environment and human health, there's the EPA, there's the CDC. What is it that drew your attention to this one, the ATSDR, Michael?
Well, the ATSDR is specifically supposed to identify health harms. The EPA looks at a variety of concerns, but the ATSDR is very much focused on how this toxic waste affects the health of people. And we were drawn to it specifically when Jamie Dowdle, another reporter that worked on the story, and I were talking, and she had just done a story about the Santa Susana Field Laboratory in Southern California. And some of her sources had talked to her about the ATSDR report that had been conducted there and told her what a bad report it was. And they thought it was not unusual for the ATSDR to dismiss health concerns like this. Mm-hmm. She told me this, and I thought, Oh my gosh, this is fantastic, because I had worked on a story with another colleague of ours about East Chicago, Indiana, a site there, a low-income housing unit that was built on a former lead smelting site. Mm-hmm. And the ATSDR said, don't worry, kids aren't going to get lead poisoned. We using state data, found that kids there were 2.5 times more likely to be poisoned with lead than kids that lived just outside the boundary of this Superfund site, and that the ATSDR had absolutely messed up this report, and as a result, kids were exposed to lead there for many more years than necessary. And eventually the housing complex was closed down by the city and zoned industrial, so that way people can't live there anymore.
Mm-hmm. So you really were following data?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Now, there is obviously a human element to this, which is part of what we heard with Melissa Mitchell's sort of her accounting of what happened right in her neighborhood, right on her street. Now, Michelle, you had an opportunity to talk with people in the community of Spanish Village, and it's not far from the Westlake landfill, where a company illegally dumped 43,000 tons of radioactive waste in the 1970s. Now, part of that dump is underground, and it's smoldering and on fire. So there's a lot going on there. So, Michelle, when you went to Spanish Village, what is it that you found, and why were you focused on this particular community?
I was really taken with Spanish Village because, let's go back to sort of the late 60s, early 70s. So that radioactive waste was dumped at the Westlake landfill in 1973. And that was the same year that all these, you know, newlyweds and young families, you know, looked north of St. Louis to all that open space and thought, wouldn't it be great to live out there? And developers came along and started building subdivisions galore. Mm-hmm. And there was this one very storybook subdivision called Spanish Village. And these families moved in. It was very idyllic, cul-de-sacs and a playground. And all the kids grew up together and played with one another. In fact, one of the big perks of the neighborhood was there was all this open space behind the neighborhood. And the kids would get on their bikes, ride out, some of them to the landfill, play all day, come home at night, and they'd be so dirty they'd have to get hosed off by their parents before they could come in for supper. Mm-hmm. And it was idyllic in so many ways, and what they many of them told me is that they had no idea. Not only did they not know that they were their next door neighbor was a landfill, but they had no idea that the next door neighbor that was a landfill also contained 43,000 tons of radioactive waste mixed with soil.
Mm-hmm. Now, Michael, the ATSDR, again, the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease, we want to keep mentioning that so that people remember what those letters all mean. They did look into the Westlake landfill. What did it find?
So in 2015, the ATSDR released a report, and they found that the site could be hazardous to workers, mm-hmm. which was different than what they found in 1991 when they dismissed concerns to workers. The ATSDR dismissed community health concerns. They did not find that water was a danger. They did not find that any radioactive material coming off the site was a danger. They also didn't address radioactive material found outside the site. So in the month after the ATSDR released its report, the state of Missouri, working with the EPA, found radioactive material outside the site that had come from the landfill and had to be covered up to make sure people weren't exposed to it.
Mm-hmm. And what accounted for this discrepancy then?
Why did the ATSDR not...
Right. Like, why was the ATSDR's findings so different from what the state of Missouri and the EPA found?
I don't know why the ATSDR did not include these things in their report. Mm-hmm. I don't know why the ATSDR has not returned and looked at groundwater at the site. The ATSDR did not answer our specific questions about this site.
Mm-hmm.
And let me take you back to we left off with those kind of shiny, happy suburban people in Spanish Village, who lived for decades having no idea about this landfill and its dangers. And, you know, that all changed around 2012 because what happened was there was an underground fire burning in that landfill, what the company Republic calls a subsurface smoldering event, which is actually a fire. And when that fire took off in that community, the entire area was just subsumed in just a terrible smell. Kids couldn't play outside. People mm-hmm. had to roll up their windows. And for years, that smell really overtook the community. And that was when people in Spanish Village, not only couldn't they open their windows, but started to wonder, you know, what is going on here? And that's when more news spread about radioactive waste. And the whole community, including all the neighbors in Spanish Village, were really pinning all their hopes on this 2015 ATSDR health report. And, you know, they felt like finally the federal government will come in, they'll look at this, they're supposed to safeguard our health, this is what they're supposed to do. And so when the ATSDR came to town and basically said nothing to see here, the community just felt completely gaslit and devastated.
Mm-hmm. And in your conversations, Michelle, with residents, you know, we heard from a resident at the top of the show. She talked about the number of cancers just around her house. Talk with us about the numbers of cancer, you know, who you managed to talk with and what they were telling you, Michelle.
Sure. So in Spanish Village subdivision, there's 92 homes. And we went to each and every one of those homes. We started by knocking on doors and followed up with phone calls and whatnot. And there were, we found many, many, many people sick with things like autoimmune diseases, brain tumors, and what have you. But we were very conservative. We only wanted to include in our story cancers that are known to be tied to radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to contact current or past residents in about half of the homes.
Mm-hmm.
And we found 33 people who had these specific cancers that are specifically tied to radiation by the federal government.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, cancer is something that is very difficult to prove. And Michelle, you've mentioned that you were looking at cancers that can be tied to certain kinds of substances. And a public health scientist at Washington University, told you that the number of cancers in Spanish Village is, quote, highly suggestive of a problem. But Republic Services, which is the owner of the Westlake landfill, it continues to point to a study that did not find elevated cancer rates in Spanish Village. So, I mean, what are we looking at
Sure. As
far as, you know, whose side is right? I mean, how do you make sense of this as reporters who are trying to get to the facts?
Sure. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons Spanish Village and that whole area of town have kind of gotten forgotten. You know, Republic Services is right. The county went out and looked at things, and they didn't find elevated rates of cancer in the zip code that includes Spanish Village. However, and now you get into the thorny problem of studying these things, they did not look at people who had moved away, and a lot of people had moved away. They didn't include people who had gone on to college.
Mm.
So they just missed so many people outright. And they also didn't track enough illnesses, according to people like Washington University's Sarah Chavez. So the proper, really in-depth epidemiological study that should be done to really tell these people what's going on still hasn't been done. And it's been 50 years since mm-hmm. that waste was first dumped there.
Right. So it is hard to prove scientifically that an area will give you cancer. But this, it's been a long nightmare for residents, especially those who moved there, you know, not knowing its history.
We did not know that there was an underground fire. We didn't know anything about that. And I grew up in this area. I grew up going to Pattonville, and no one ever told me. It's like the biggest secret around here. Not anymore, but it was when we bought this house. No one told us what we were moving into.
That was Tanya Mason. She moved to Bridgeton, bought a house there, but had to move because of the stench of burning garbage. Michelle, I mean, was it at all surprising to hear that folks weren't aware? You know, even people like Tanya Mason, who grew up going to schools in a district that serves families in municipalities like Bridgeton and Maryland Heights?
It's astounding. And even to this day, when I was in that neighborhood a year ago last summer and was knocking on all these doors, there were a lot of people still who didn't know what I was talking about. And there's another issue, which is that there's a lot of new people moving into that family for whom English is sort of either a second language or a struggle.
Right.
And I even talked to people who moved in and said, I found out the day after I moved in about this. I had no idea. So it's just, you know, they call St. Louis a secret city for a reason. There's a big secretive sort of history about the atomic waste there. And I did find it really surprising that people who currently live there didn't know about mm-hmm. it.
And are there no sort of regulations around, you know, when you make a sale of a home that you have to disclose that background?
That's a great question. You don't. If you have had your house personally tested and found something suspect, you are supposed to disclose that. But if you haven't, there's no law on the books right now to compel homeowners to disclose anything about the landfill.
Mm-hmm. This is actually a reminder of a conversation we had with the husband of an activist named Mary Osco. And they lived near Coldwater Creek. And he had talked, Jared Osco had talked about he and his wife finding out that there was some exposure to radioactive material and that they did not feel like they could leave that home, not only because of the expense, but because they did not feel right about selling that home to someone who might come in, you know, with young children or with older folks in their family. Is that something?
Yes. Yeah. Melissa Mitchell, who you featured at the top of your show, still lives there. And she just feels like she can't move. First of all, she's stuck because of just the pricing and whatnot. But she doesn't feel in good conscience that she could sell the home and not disclose it and have another family move in. And when the smell was really bad, mm-hmm. a lot of neighbors sold their homes at a loss and just like Tommy Mason and just got the hell out of town or moved to the next county because that smell was so bad that even when families would go to, you know, Target or go out to eat at Olive Garden, they would have to get up and leave because it just made life impossible.
Mm-hmm. We need to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Reuters reporters Michelle Conlon and Michael Pell. They're two of the six reporters behind the August 7th investigation titled How a U.S. Health Agency Became a Shield for Polluters. The U.S. Health Agency we're talking about is Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry. And to remind folks who are just joining us, your Reuters team reporting found that ATSDR, which was created in 1980 to protect communities from the harmful effects of hazardous waste sites and environmental emergencies, is instead being used as a kind of cover by polluters. And that is what has been happening with waste disposal company Republic Services. So, Michael, in 2015, the ASTDR released its report on the Westlake landfill. Can you give us a little bit more maybe about that report and what the impact of it was?
Sure. So when the report was released, it dismissed community health concerns. And like I said earlier, it did find that there were health concerns for employees that work at the landfill. But for as far as those living around and working around the site, it dismissed these concerns. It said, because nobody's drinking the water is not a concern. They did find elevated levels of radon coming off the site. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the levels of radon were 2 to 3 times higher than those allowed for licensees of the United States Nuclear Regulatory Committee. But then at the same time, it, as sources told us, the report downplayed those findings and said, well, you know, the equipment wasn't working right. And therefore, we think, you know, we think this will be fine, that these are levels that won't cause any health harms.
Mm-hmm. So go ahead. You're going to add something?
Oh, I was just going to say, and the results were almost immediate. As soon as the report came out, the EPA the EPA actually announced the publishing of the report and said, hey, the ATSDR has just released a report finding no community health harms. Great news. The Republic had set up a kind of AstroTurf organization, that was kind of acting as if it was a community group. And this group immediately started sending out social media messages saying, you know, taunting the people that lived in the area with this report, saying, look, your concerns are groundless. Go home. Your TV show's over.
Mm-hmm. And how significant is this, given the size of Republic Services? I mean, this is not just a locally based small company, right?
Republic is the second largest waste operator in the U.S. And we can't state enough how much of a godsend this federal ATSDR report was for Republic. In the weeks before it was released, there were people marching up and down St. Charles Rock Road carrying signs about nuclear catastrophe. School districts were sending notes home to parents saying, if this fire reaches this radioactive waste, that could be a nuclear catastrophe. The community was just on edge, and there was a lot of public outcry. And Republic had a huge, huge radioactive, publicity issue on its hands. And the day that report was released, the company leveraged it on its social media. The companies, as Mike explained, the AstroTurf Group, disseminated the report widely. About 14 days later, the company filed all sorts of expert testimony in a lawsuit, and many of those experts cited the ATSDR report. So it gave the company kind of this patina and this sheen of the federal government blessing the site, essentially, and saying, hey, this is okay. And so for a while, that report did effectively calm the situation down and for a while make that public relations nightmare go away for Republic.
Mm-hmm. Now, Michael, you and Michelle and the rest of the team, you didn't just look at ATSDR's impact in the St. Louis region. Your Reuters team actually reviewed 428 of that agency's official reports, and you found some very troubling things. Talk with us about what you found.
Yeah, so what we found was that the agency often relies on faulty work for their findings. In one report, the ATSDR dismissed past health harms from a vapor intrusion at a site, toxic vapor intrusion, and then said, well, at the same time, we should note that the air testing that we did occurred after a mitigation system had been installed to remove these toxic elements. So then we identified other sites across the country where the ATSDR has conducted studies, like at Camp Lejeune in Cohoes, New York. And you can see the huge impact this has. Camp Lejeune is a great example because in 1997, the ATSDR released a report dismissing health concerns. And it wasn't until 12 years later, after Jerry Ensminger and Mike Partain, people that had lived or were born at Camp Lejeune, they did the work that the ATSDR should have done, identified that, yes, there was dangerous chemicals in the drinking water there, and the ATSDR had to admit that their report was wrong and conduct new studies that actually turned out to be fantastic work and identified health harms there.
Mm-hmm. How has this been permitted to go on this long? So, the August 7th piece goes into a great deal of detail about why this agency is struggling. And considering the huge scope of its job and its responsibilities, ATSDR is not very well staffed or well funded. What is it that you found in that regard, Michael?
The ATSDR has some absolutely wonderful people working there who have dedicated their lives to helping the public. But it's like any, federal bureaucracy. It struggles with funding. It struggles with institutional problems. They have lost staff. a tremendous amount of staff. They are underfunded, as former ATSDR employees told us. And you can see that with the amount of money that they have, it's really difficult to go to these sites and conduct work that helps communities. Camp Lejeune is another great example. Mm-hmm. When Congress got involved, when the community got involved, they forced the ATSDR to provide a more sound scientific analysis. But that cost millions and millions of dollars, at least $40 million. And that's about half their annual budget. And even so, when Congress told the Navy that you have to fund these ATSDR studies, the Navy denied it. The Navy said, we're not going to do this. They held back the money, and Congress actually had to hold up appointments. So that just goes to show you how dedicated everybody in the process has to be in order to get the ATSDR to work in the way that it was supposed to work.
Mm-hmm. So a chemical association and a petroleum institute, they joined an environmental group in a lawsuit to force the government to create the ATSDR in the first place, back in the late 70s and 1980. Are these big oil and chemical interests then part of the reason that this agency regularly gives cover to polluters?
So I think that these agencies, these industry organizations could read the writing on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And as sources of ours said, that they probably got a good deal of what they wanted, which was uncertainty, an underfunded agency that would never actually be able to kind of prove the environmental connection to people's health harms. And so, yes, they were involved in designing this agency, if not designing, then at least setting this agency up for what it's become.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, for a story like this, you're looking at so much information. It's very data heavy. To what extent was it easy or difficult to get the information that you needed, in particular from government agencies, Michael?
Well, the ATSDR makes a lot of this information public. All of their reports are available online. And so taking that unstructured data and putting it into a structured database was intensive. A lot of the information about the testing and what the levels of exposure are difficult to really nail down, and they're difficult to parse through. I mm-hmm. mean, that's you need experts to do that, and we were very fortunate to have former EPA, former ATSDR researchers across the country to agree to work with us, go over for these reports. Mm-hmm. And without them, it would have made everything that much more difficult.
So I guess it's somewhat encouraging to hear that there was willingness, that is, on the part of some of those folks to work with you all as reporters on this investigation. Now, this dispute between Republic Services, the residents of places like Spanish Village, and the federal agencies that are supposed to be responsible for these cases, this is ongoing. And your report, that is, it notes that the EPA is considering a plan that would involve removing more radioactive contaminated waste, but the agency doesn't know when that effort would begin. So, I mean, where do things go from here, Michelle?
Well, you're right to bring that up. I mean, the EPA has basically said we don't know when the cleanup will begin. It seems kind of shocking that all these years later that's the case. The current state of play at the Westlake landfill is that there's an investigation going on. It's called a design remedial investigation, where they're trying to characterize the entire site. And what's happening is that they keep finding more issues, which adds more years and more work.
Mm-hmm.
Lately, more issues with the water there. Basically, what the EPA is now saying as of today is, you know, we hope that this cleanup where we're going to remove a lot of the radioactive waste will start within the next decade, but they can't say for sure, which is another reason why residents feel so let down and gaslit and concerned and fearful.
Mm-hmm. And as we end here, I mean, I want to make sure that we are ending with people. Is there anything that you saw or you heard from anyone, Michelle, during your reporting here on the ground that really drove home the urgency of the situation for folks in Spanish Village?
Yeah, you know, there's one thing, this is not in the story, you know, there's so much that doesn't get in the story, but so there's the people that were the parents kind of in the 70s and 80s, and then there's their children. But then there's the children of those children. And, you know, I'll never forget talking with a woman, Becky Stogner. She grew up there. Her parents actually still live there. Her mom has cancer. And, you know, Becky went on to have a son who spent a ton of his childhood in Spanish Village and died at a very young age of thyroid cancer, which is one of the cancers connected. And Becky just walks around with that question mark in her head about whether or not her growing up there and her son spending so much time there, whether or not any of those things have anything to do with one another. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just the fact that there's so many unanswered questions and so many real scientific researched answers.
Mm-hmm. Michelle Conlon and Michael Pell are two Reuters reporters whose six-journalist team produced the August 7th multimedia investigation titled How a U.S. Health Agency Became a Shield for Polluters. Thank you both so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Elaine.
Thank you so much.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.